Hey everyone, this is Andy, better known as Love Retro BTW on Twitter, X, Threads, IG, and Cafe BTW on TikTok and YouTube. A quick update that the Cafe BTW podcast is taking a very long hiatus, but I still have something really amazing to share with you. We have a fantastic retro gaming community on Twitter X, where we've crossed well over 2,000 passionate members. And if you're a lover of retro gaming, this is the perfect place to share your content, showcase your pickups, or just chat about your favorite old school games. To dive into nostalgia and become a part of the thriving community, click in the show notes on the Cafe BTW link tree, or go right to my Twitter X profile on Love Retro BTW. And now, without further ado, gear up for another sensational episode of the Gamers Week Podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week Podcast. So this week's question is, what's the first non-Earthbound thing that pops into your mind when you hear the words fuzzy pickles?
I'm assuming he means suitable for work answers.
Yeah.
Correct.
Fuzzy Pickles was probably Ron Jeremy's nickname back in the 70s.
No.
Mildly safe for work. I'll yeah, love. Yeah.
Did you know that The Lost Boys is trending on Twitter?
It wasn't trending for me. I was just on there.
It's trending for me, damn it.
They know their audience.
My what's happening is Yankees at Red Sox, Killers of the Flower Moon, Capcom, The Lost Boys, and Unity 3D.
I'm pretty sure Unity is trending for everybody.
Something we should talk about this evening?
We will. Oh, we will.
All right, you ready for this?
Yes. Y'all ready for this?
Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, the worst, and the weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 90, and today is Wednesday, September 13th, 2023. And my name is Ryan, aka Retro Game Brews, but I have with me two absolutely fantastic co-hosts that I would love to introduce to you right now. First up is Blue Williams, who is currently writing a strongly worded letter to the heads of Craigslist for not allowing her favorite words on personal ads. Blue, how you doing today?
It's kink shaming, man.
Exactly. It's kink shaming. Hashtag Craig kink shame.
He's a little work.
Is that a thing? Workshop, yeah.
Next up is Donnie G. Retro, who is proud to say that he's ruined three relationships and four potential marriages with his crop dusting abilities on the dance floor. In his bowels, we praise. How are you doing today, Donnie?
My bowels have an intense impact on the whole butterfly effect of the universe, just saying that. And I do notice that you paused at the first comma in the intro. Good job, buddy.
I do these things for you, man. I do it for you. So before we jump into our reviews, reactions, and requests for this week, we have a pretty big announcement here. Gamers Week Podcast will be the official commentary team for the fourth Blockbuster World Championships at Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
Woo! Holla!
Yeah! It's happening!
So to be honest with you, this is something we've wanted to talk about on the podcast for quite a while, and we finally got the go-ahead to talk about it, so we are super excited for this. It's going to be 2 days in which we are going to be at Portland Retro Gaming Expo, both Saturday and Sunday, for a 2 to 3 hour stream each. So if you're not there, you can certainly watch us live on Twitch, and we will have all the links in order to do that. But also, if you're there, come see us, please. Say hello.
Stop by, shake our hands, look at us longingly. Just like you do with the podcast.
I don't know. Isn't that going to make Ryan jealous?
You know what? I'll do it for the cast.
Creeping me out, man.
All right, so why don't we take a look at our reviews and reactions and requests for the week. First up is BegMagnet2070. He said, wow, when Retro Game Brews was doing the VIP skit, I seriously thought he was talking to Mega Man X, not riffing on Twitter. Shows where my brain is at. And I said to Ben, you are the best kind of nerd, sir.
Hashtag priorities.
At JBennett13 said, I would like to extend my gratitude on the length of the podcast every week. 75-ish minutes is perfect. Blue, yeah, you want to take this one?
We usually record for about 2 hours, and I got a hack and slash with brutality to get it down to 75 minutes. So I'm glad that you appreciate it.
Nobody ever extends their gratitude for my length.
There's a lot to be desired there.
Oh.
Not saying it's not the same with me, man. Hashtag empathy. And last up is Atta Beer and Atta Game says, I was today years old when I learned there was a second verse to I'm a Little Teapot.
I think we learned that from Ryan, like back on episode 5 or something like that, 5 or 6, when right. We had Leroy Patterson on and Ryan sang it for us.
I don't remember this. So my guess is that it's because it was so traumatic, I put it in the back of my brain.
Well, let's recount it for you. I think it was after the Bills got beat from the Super Bowl, or not the Super Bowl, but the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't it the Kansas City Chiefs?
Definitely, in the back of my brain, okay. Yeah.
Well, now it's in the front. Now it's in the driver's seat, heading out the windshield.
I could totally put the soundbite right here.
Yes.
All right, so I apologize to all of our listeners' ears. This is going to sound awful, but here we go. I'm a little teapot, short and stout. Here is my handle. Here is my spout. When I get all steamed up, hear me shout. Tip me over and pour me out. I'm a very special teapot. Yes, it's true. Here's an example of what I can do. I can turn my handle into a spout. Tip me over and pour me out. Yes. I hate you all.
Huzzah! And I finished.
With the second verse. Amazing.
Actually, I'm going to be honest. I had no idea there was a second verse.
Neither did I.
Oh, that's the worst. I could have gotten done. Yes, and I was only a few days sober, and now I'm almost at 2 years. So thank you for that as well.
And now it's time for the
thought I'd love to hear that sound.
All of you relax. This is a matter of inconvenient timing. That's all. Police action was inevitable. And as it happens, necessary. So let them fumble about outside and stay calm. This is simply the beginning. I thought I told all of you I want radio silence until...
Oh, I'm very sorry, Hans. I didn't get that message. Maybe you should have put it as an option in the very important poll. I figured since I waxed Tony and Marco and his friend here, I thought you, Ryan, and Blue might be a little lonely, so I wanted to give you a call.
How does he know so much about this?
This is very kind of you. I assume you are a mysterious party crasher. You are most troublesome for a security guard.
Wrong guess. You want to go for double jeopardy where the scores can really change?
Who are you, then?
Just a fly in the ointment, Hans. A monkey in the wrench. A voter in the poll. A voice on the podcast.
Check on all the others. Don't use the radio. See if he's lying about Marco and find out if anyone else is missing.
Mystery guest. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Unless you want to open up the poll and add a fourth option.
No, I'm afraid not.
But you have me at a loss. You know my name, but who are you?
Just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo, Marshall Dillon.
Yeah, I was always partial to Donnie G. Retro. I loved his 90s outfits.
You really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, Martha Fokker.
Martha Fokker. I was like, say it, say the word, say the phrase now.
After I got done recording that and posting it into the Discord, I had an epiphany. I was like, I should have said Sega Genesis does what Nintendo don't, Martha Fokker. And by that time, I had already closed out the project and didn't save it. So I was like, nope,
you didn't save it? Are you crazy?
I like to live on the edge. Apparently. With that kind of stuff.
Living on the edge.
That's insane.
Well, that's how I live, Blue.
Now I'm concerned for you.
Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, our very important poll. Jeez.
Keep that in.
If you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. The question for this week was on Monday. It was, I want to start my own business day. So tell us, what video game related business would you want to start? Coming in third place here was gaming crafts / merch merchandise at 16.3%. Following up with number two, game reviews at 29.6%. And taking the top spot this week was game development at 34.8%, which is very popular. Now, 19.3% of you said other, so let's take a look at some of the comments from the poll. At Darkwing J says, I always wanted to make a retro arcade that has games all the way up to 2000 with old music videos and commercials of the 80s and 90s playing on TV screens and a video game store that sells classic games at good prices. I would be your very, very, very great first customer.
And yeah, let us know when you open up.
Absolutely. At Simon Ash here says, gaming escape rooms. You'll get pushed into a pit and get LTZ and square foam blocks thrown at you to stack until you can reach the top and escape.
As long as they don't disappear when you stack them. Right.
Like, how quickly are these things going to get thrown in my face?
It's like MXC for gaming escape
rooms. Yeah. Just Z-piece, 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 Z-piece. Son of a, just throw the L. At Inverse2 Chaos says, I'd be a gaming historian and researcher. We need to know how it began and what became thereof for 50 plus years. At I'm Thomas Wilson says, I'd start a company that does what game clubs set out to do and figure out a way to revive old and removed iOS games regardless of publisher or licensing difficulties. Of course, this is a fantasy. Many companies would rather bury their IPs 10 feet under than let people play them. It's a very good point. Yep. They're going to take them to the grave. And at SassySony007 says, I seriously considered going to school for game development. Unfortunately, I went another route.
Mistakes were made.
Learn from them. So based on this week's question, Ryan, what was your choice?
So I think there's a lot of things that I would like to do as far as a gaming industry person. Crafts and merch are probably not my forte because I'm not particularly artistic, so that we could throw that one out. Game reviews, while they're fun, I don't know if I would want that to be something that I'd want to do long-term, but game development might be. I've got some ideas that I would love to make into games, stories and what have you, that I think could be fun. But I think the dream would be to open up one of those free play arcades. Just buy a big space, open up the arcade, maybe do beer sales there too, if you want. So maybe it'd be a little bit of a barcade, have a place to sell games, you know, the whole nine yards, and just make it a destination for retro gamers in a fairly populous city. And you know what? Spend every single day trying to break everyone else's world records.
Or just maniacally shut off the machine as soon as they're about to break. So like, oh, sorry, I don't know what happened.
Oh, you, my God. Power outage. All the time.
Brown out. I apologize. Blue, what about you? What's your choice?
I went with game development. See, game reviews can be fun, but the problem with game reviews is that you're stuck playing a lot of games that you don't actually want to. Or if the game is bad, it's not like you can just quit, you know, 3 hours in if it's not agreeing with you. You got to stick it out and finish it if you want to give the game a proper, fair review. So that's why I don't do game reviews anymore. They suck.
I was going to say, you sound like a person that's talking from experience.
maybe. But game development, that sounds so much better. I know it's a ridiculous amount of work. But, you know, in this dream scenario that I'm concocting, I could create the perfect game that would be exactly what I want to play. Something open world with lots of exploration. There would be tons of horror and atmosphere. There would be an amazing story. There would be puzzles you have to solve in order to survive. And you'd get to pet the dogs. I mean, this would be game of the year, hands down. Nothing else would even come close.
Based on petting the dogs alone.
Absolutely. What about you, Donnie?
I went to school for game development, game art and design, and I've never done anything with it aside from doing some art in a tabletop role-playing game guidebook. I've wanted to start my own barcade. I actually went about investigating and researching all of the elements that I would need to do in order to get that opened, probably back in 2017, 2018. Went to a bank, talked about funding, talked about a loan and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, all these barcades started popping up in my area. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? I kind of missed the boat. But that's a little scary, too, to leave a job and start a business like this, not knowing if it's going to fail or succeed.
Right. And then, of course, 2020 came like a bullet train. And
You would have been SOL there, buddy.
Oh, absolutely. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Right. Maybe it's something that could still happen. I'm not sure. But I'm with Blue and with Ryan. I know he had talked about, or you had talked about some game development. I've always wanted to make a game. I had talked about possibly making like a full motion video type game earlier this year. That really hasn't come to fruition. I've been playing a point and click game on Steam, and I really liked it. And I think that might be an easier game to do, depending on what kind of engine you use to do all of the, of course, you have to do the, a little precursor too.
I know what engine not to use.
But I would love to create a video game and have that go out to the masses and hopefully have people tell me that they like it. Of course, then there's the flip side, the nightmare scenario where people are like, oh, my God, this sucks. And they roast me constantly on Twitter.
So
this is the worst game we've ever heard of. But you have heard of it.
I make it, Blue reviews it and just shoots it like a whatever.
You would want a fair review for me, wouldn't you?
Yes. I don't want any special treatment. It has to be fair.
When I make a game, please, I will pay you for a good one.
I was going to say, I'll be writing the review for Donnie's game, and it'll be like that gif of Wesley Snipes where he's got holding the gun with the tears going down his face.
Yep, from New Jack City.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and shout out our patrons for the week?
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnear, Doongie Forever, Ludo Timbo, Ducks in Disguise, Don't Make Me Pull Over This Car, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, Matto1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, V Red Ox, PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, Skalaziel, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Voice Fan, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gamatroid, Michael LeKite, Emoesque, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Group, Fruitcake's Number One Stan, Ducks with Thick Thighs. Did I miss Byron's Reward? If you've been told you have teeth like a Ferengi, try veneers.
What?
Up and let's go. These are all really deep cut references. Wizard of Zardoz, Bobson Dugnut, Retro Blast Pat, Great Simon 81, VNT Zilligai, Johnny Boombots, Crunchy Kong, and Sheriff Snacks. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
All right, so why don't we jump into our headlines? Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic, family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they're asking, how far have you gone for a retro-related thing or event? Send answers to email at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes. My answer is not where I've gone, but where I'm going. and the distance is 2,633.2 miles to Portland Retro Gaming Expo, which is going to be happening in like a month from today.
Yeah, same here.
I guess my farthest was when I went to Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee.
That'd do it.
Picked up a couple good games there, if I remember.
What, Milan Secret Castle?
Yeah, I mean, it's still a great game. Yeah. Sorry.
Better than picking up the clap.
Thank you for that perspective.
Avoid the clap. Jimmy Dugan.
Jimmy Dugan, right? That's good advice.
From PC World, Microsoft is releasing an Xbox credit card. You should skip it. Microsoft is wading into new waters with its gaming brand, credit cards. On Monday, the company announced a new Xbox credit card, which allows card holders to earn points redeemable for rewards, but only on Xbox.com. The launch begins on September 21st for Xbox insiders living in a U.S. state. Availability will later expand in 2024 to all Xbox gamers in that same territory. This branded MasterCard is offered through the U.S. Consumer Division of Barclays, with no annual fee and a reward system that guarantees 1 point for every dollar spent. A few categories qualify for higher rewards. Eligible purchases at the Microsoft Store earn 5 points for every $1, while eligible streaming and food delivery services earn 3 points for every $1. These points are accumulated separately from the Microsoft Rewards Program. The card also offers an initial sign-up bonus of 5,000 points, a $50 value, and 3 months of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate for new Game Pass members after their first purchase. Applicants will have a choice of 5 different card designs and can have their gamer tag printed on the card. That's not dangerous at all.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure it's fine.
Digital wallet and contactless payments are supported. For diehard Xbox fans, this new promotion may sound like a perfect new avenue to express their brand loyalty, something to pick up in addition to, say, the mini drink fridge or the upcoming full-scale Xbox 360 replica build kit. But for those on the sidelines, the limited terms of the new card will likely fail to appeal. You can already get games and even pay for Game Pass for free using the Microsoft Rewards program. There's also a way to get Xbox Game Pass for cheap if you don't have the patience or ability to earn points through Bing searches and Xbox console activity. The better call is to use the Microsoft Rewards program, pick up a standard cashback rewards card if you can pay off your balance each month, and slap a decal on your credit card if you want to show your Xbox pride. But you can't always put a price on love, which Microsoft is likely banking on.
So is this the perfect solution? If Game Pass is not making as much profit as you want to, all you have to do is get into that variable ABR game.
Yeah, you're not wrong. They're going to get so many people that are the brand loyalists. Like, oh, I got to have my Xbox credit card. Let me go get my snacks. Let me just pay for my car repair. I can't pay my bill this month. Oh, no, I got to declare bankruptcy or Xbox or otherwise Microsoft's going to come after me.
And everywhere you go. So when you go to a restaurant, too, somebody hands your credit card back and says, thank you for dining with us tonight, Pickle Sucker 3000.
Anyway, I was trying to think of what happens to your food in the kitchen if it happens to be staffed by PlayStation fans.
Oh, that's a good point. Like, did that guy just pay with an Xbox credit card? Yeah, can you wrap this up? Because he's going to take this leftovers home. Yeah, I'll wrap it up.
Floor spice makes everything nice.
How clumsy.
So this is in a GameSpot article about the same topic. For more on the Xbox MasterCard, including details on interest rates and other key particulars, be sure to read the fine print. Among other things, it states that anyone whose Microsoft account is suspended or locked will lose access to account benefits. And this seemingly means that people who are jerks and violate Microsoft's code of conduct might lose their credit card perks.
Oh. Ooh, but they don't tell you that. They don't tell you that. That's the fine print.
That's the fine print. And the APRs for this card are 20.99%, 26.99%, or 31.99% based on creditworthiness.
Holy jeez.
Yeah, and I would imagine that people who would be big into this are probably in their early 20s, late teens, that mm-hmm. would, you know, rack up a bunch of credit card debt. So chances are they're going to be paying that 31% because they have no established credit. Yeah, this is a freaking nightmare.
But it's Xbox, man. Xbox wouldn't do us wrong.
Get something else. Get something with a cashback card. Get something with points or miles or whatever. don't waste it on like, oh, well, if I spend so much money, I can get a free Xbox game. Yeah, wait the time before it like comes down to like $20. Just this is a complete waste of time.
Yeah, but you get 3 points for every dollar spent while you're door dashing food while you play your Xbox game.
Hey, Mom, I got Arby's. Arby's is coming to deliver. I get points. Where's my Mountain Dew?
That's all I hear.
Does Arby's have Mountain Dew or are they Coke?
Ooh, good question.
Not important. Anyway.
The deep cuts.
I mean, it should be acknowledged that every credit card company is a soulless, blood-sucking entity. So in that respect, this Xbox credit card is just more of the same. If you're considering doing this, it's your money, your life, do what you want. But I think you should objectively compare the benefits and see that maybe being able to get a handful of free Xbox games is probably not the best use of your credit.
So what happens when all of a sudden Epic Games comes out with their own credit card for Fortnite and say, oh, you can earn a V-Buck for every $10 you spend on your credit card, you can earn a V-Buck.
Well, according to demandsage.com, the Fortnite player demographic is 18 to 24 years is 62.7%. They're all old enough to have credit cards.
Yes,
the next one is 25 to 34 years, which is 22.5%. So a full like 85% of Fortnite users are in a demographic that can have a credit card.
So are Call of Duty. Activision Blizzard will jump on this. Like, get your own Call of Duty credit card.
Yeah, if this becomes a thing. Oh,
God.
This is one of those times where we're usually, you know how we're usually like, all right, if you're listening, like, this is our idea. If you're listening, this is not our idea.
Please we're do not give us credit. For this. All right, next up from IGN, Square Enix loses nearly $2 billion in value since Final Fantasy 16. Square Enix has lost nearly $2 billion in value since the launch of Final Fantasy 16 in June, and a new report has cast doubt on the company's ability to recover. Shares in the company have plummeted nearly 30% since Final Fantasy 16 came out on June 22nd, closing on September 13 at their lowest point since May last year. The PlayStation 5 exclusive sold 3 million copies during launch week, a figure that sparked a debate online about whether it had met Square Enix's sales targets. Square Enix told IGN in July that sales of Final Fantasy 16 were extremely strong and insisted the game had sold well relative to the PS5 install base. Sources familiar with the performance of Final Fantasy 16 confirmed sales had slowed considerably since launch, but that the game was not yet considered a disaster. Earlier in September, Square Enix announced Final Fantasy 16 is set for two paid DLC expansions and confirmed a PC port was officially in development. A new report from Bloomberg painted a bleak picture of Square Enix, which reported a sharp profit decline in August. Analysts told the publication that Final Fantasy 16 failed to make up for the poor performance of previous Square Enix flops, such as Marvel's Avengers and Forspoken, and mobile games that were shut down soon after launch. The root of the problem, sources told Bloomberg, is that projects at Square Enix have become a single producer's fiefdom. Producers are given full rein over the scope and direction of projects, whose goals can shift without warning. The upshot of this is volatility in the quality of the final product. Square Enix has a new CEO, Takashi Kiryu, who intends to reduce the number of smaller games in the works to focus on big-budget games that have a greater chance of making an impact on the company's bottom line. One source close to Square Enix told IGN that Kiryu has called for change across the company globally, but that change will take time. Upcoming Square Enix games include Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Star Ocean: The Second Story R, Foam Stars, and Final Fantasy XIV expansion Dawn Trail. So the projects become a single producer's fiefdom. Is this like the Ryan Johnson school of content creation? Where it's like, okay, this guy seems a little crazy. He's got some controversial ideas, but you know what? Let's just go with it. What's the worst that could happen?
This is a game about nothing.
I don't understand this kind of obsession that companies seem to have in the last 5-10 years with auteurs. And I get it, when you can find a genius Mm-hmm. You should let the genius work. But the number of geniuses that actually seem to exist versus the number of geniuses that companies are willing to give incredible amounts of freedom and money to.
Right. Yeah.
Those numbers don't quite match up. And the success of these types of projects where you just give one person absolute power, that they speak for themselves.
I think what's going to happen now is there's probably going to be further oversight. There always should be somebody keeping these people in check.
Right? Absolutely.
And then, you know, and the next thing you know, the guy goes on a coke bender and he comes into this realization like, oh, I'm going to have this and it's going to be great. And one of the things that they teach you in game development is you might think something is fun. You might think something is great and playable and lovable and whatnot. But once you get it out to the masses, you know, that might be a completely different story. That's why I have these Absolutely. Focus groups and test markets and stuff like that. So, yeah, I can see how somebody can sit there and get siloed or get tunnel vision on their own vision and trying to get that to come to fruition. But in the end, it's a garbled mess and it doesn't work.
Well, I think this is even an analogy for some of the stuff that we do, right? You know, one of the things is we come up with ideas for the show, for things that we want to accomplish. And I'm blessed to have the two of you to provide me with feedback to say, I don't know about that, or hey, let's give it a shot.
Right.
But if you're the only person in the room, a lot of times what I think happens is that you get too invested in your own vision or own projects, and you're unwilling to kind of kill some things off that aren't working.
Makes sense.
To borrow a term from writing, you have to learn to kill your babies.
Exactly. Exactly. The one thing is I've heard through several people who got a chance at Nintendo Live to play, not Nintendo Live, it was PAX, to play Foam Stars, said that it was a lot of fun and that it's basically a Splatoon knockoff, but supposedly it's actually pretty good. I don't know if that's a game that's going to appeal like Final Fantasy 16 does, though, but I also would imagine it's probably less expensive to produce, but who knows? Maybe that's something Square Enix can start to pile on to.
That's going to be the saving grace of Square Enix is Foam
Not
Stars?
Specifically, but to have a win in that category would be nice for them.
I get that. I understand that.
Yeah. And I don't want to speculate too much. I don't see it catching on. I think that the player base that's interested in those types of games is well entrenched in Splatoon. Right. And so to start over somewhere else is probably not that attractive of a prospect. And a game like Foam Stars will live and die based on its online player base. So if not enough people go over, then it's going to be very short lived.
I mean, if I had a PlayStation 5, absolutely, I would give Foam Stars a try. I just don't have one. And right. I don't know if a lot of owners of the Switch are also owners of a PS5.
I am.
And you guys are nerds and you buy all the toys, right?
But Foam Stars is going to be out on PS4 and you do have a PS4, so.
Ipso facto.
That is a valid point, yep.
Mm-hmm. You just got schooled.
Lawyered. All right, from Engadget, Nintendo is sunsetting Mario Kart Tour next month. Mario Kart Tour has carved out a niche for itself in the mobile gaming space since launching as a beta in 2019. But all good things must come to an end. Nintendo just announced that there are only three more tours, original multiplayer events scheduled for the next month. After that, the tours will repeat from the beginning. There will be no new courses, drivers, carts, gliders, or features of any kind added after October 4th, according to an in-game screen grab posted to Reddit. Does this mean that the game is heading to the digital scrapyard? Yes and no. Nintendo is abandoning the development for new content for the free-to-play racer, but it'd still be available for download and experience. Without the lure of fresh content, however, the player base will likely shrink dramatically, despite Nintendo saying that they hope people will continue to use the app. It's worth noting that Mario Kart Tour has been a success for the company, raking in nearly $300 million as of last year. Hall makes it Nintendo's second most profitable mobile game title behind the massively popular Fire Emblem Heroes. Despite financial success, Mario Kart Tour has had its share of controversy. Like most free-to-play mobile games, it's constantly asked you for money, and the most egregious instance of this was something called Spotlight Pipes. This gotcha mechanic provided loot boxes with undisclosed odds, so you had no idea if it was worth it or not. Gamers rallied against the mechanic, and Nintendo removed the pipes last September. However, the company faces a class action lawsuit after a parent claimed that his child spent $170 on Spotlight pipes, as reported by Kotaku. Nintendo is still churning out the content for other mobile games, including Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, Super Mario Run, and the aforementioned Fire Emblem Heroes. The company recently partnered the mobile giant DNA to create something called Nintendo Systems, which presumably is developing new smartphone games and related experiences. So I got a point to Blue on this one. Have you played Mario Kart Tour?
I played Mario Kart Tour back in 2019 when it was the beta. I got accepted to the beta and played it. And while I was really impressed at how well they were able to get the game mechanics from Mario Kart to translate over to a touchscreen, it was a dismal experience because it was so scummy with free-to-play nonsense. You beat a race, and before you can open up any other races, there's a timer. And you have to wait till the timer gets to zero, or, you know, you can pay if you want to just fast forward on that timer. If you want new carts or new characters, new gliders, whatever, because eventually as you get further in the game, of course, things get more difficult. And so you need new carts and characters to keep up. But if you want those, well, then you have to use the pipes. At least back in the beta, you had to. It was so blatantly like, give us your money at every turn. And I hated it.
Is it Wesley Pipes?
What?
I understood that reference.
Thank you, Ryan. You were on mute, but it took a second.
No. Billy Bong Thornton.
For me, mobile gaming is dead to me. I don't do any mobile gaming whatsoever. I did Candy Crush back in the day, and you know, I started to get addicted to it, so much so that I was willing to spend that 99 cents, that $1.99, because you know what? It's not that bad. It's $1.99. Well, the next thing you know, a month later, you're like, holy crap, I spent $400 on Candy Crush. Yeah, time to shut that down. Not that I did personally, but I'm just using that as an example. Mobile games are the devil. They suck your money out of you quicker than any. Yeah, quicker than anything. And
quicker than a Dyson?
I had to be quicker. Because the Dyson has constant suction. I don't like mobile games at all. All they are is a money grab. The only mobile gaming that I will do is I will slap an emulator on my phone and play classic NES, Super Nintendo, and Sega Genesis games. That's it.
And that's not even mobile gaming per se. It's regular games on a mobile platform. Mobile games are kind of their own unique thing where they are fundamentally designed to take your money. It doesn't have to be that way. You could just sell them like regular games where you pay a purchase price up front and it's your game and you get to play it. But they don't do that because they'd rather idiots pay $400 a month for Candy Crush.
Ooh, that was harsh.
Not anyone in particular.
Right.
Right. But I am not sorry to see this go away. My main hope in them shutting this down, even though it's made $300 million in its lifetime, is that they're siphoning over all Mario Kart creative resources into a Mario Kart 9. That's what I'm crossing my fingers for.
That's a strong hope there. I'm just not sure if that's what they're going to be doing.
Well, why else would they shut it down? It's made $300 million. It's got to be cheap as hell to create.
Sure.
Well, I mean, that's the real question. If you're making so much money, $300 million, is that over the lifespan or is that a year?
Yeah, over the lifespan as of last year.
Okay. So over the lifespan for something that's been around for 4 years, 3 years, four years. Mm-hmm. That's not terrible.
No.
Yeah, if I was speculating, I would say that probably how much profit they're making of it has dropped off significantly for a while.
Yeah, if they saw a significant drop
right
from like last year to this year, or even within the last 6 months, they're like, oh, the ship's going down. We got to get off of it while we can.
Exactly. But yeah, we would still like you to play it.
You guys ready to hear about our top three new releases?
Boy, am I.
Let's then talk about our top three new releases for the week.
Thunder Ray, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Thunder Ray is an arcade boxing, retro-like gameplay with blood and violence. Defeat all the best fighters in the galaxy to become the GOAT of the universe. Step into the ring and experience the adrenaline-pumping action of our retro arcade boxing game, reminiscent of the classic Super Punch-Out of the SNES era, but with a modern twist. Get ready to throw jabs, hooks, and uppercuts as you face off against a roster of colorful and eccentric opponents. The game features meticulously crafted HD animations, bringing each character to life with stunning detail and fluid movements. AK Exolotl?
It's a lot of you.
What's the matter with you? PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. The cutest, deadliest, and only top-down roguelike shooter featuring AK-wielding axolotls. Blast your way through the Animal Kingdom with an arsenal of kick-ass guns, mighty power-ups, and even raise an army of trigger-happy baby axolotls. From slithering sock snakes to giant knife-wielding enemy crabs, these bosses will put your regenerative abilities to the test. Time to bring an AK-47 to a knife fight. Super Bomberman R2. PS5, Xbox Series XS, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. The latest title of the party battle game series, Super Bomberman R, with new adventures and game modes, it has the largest content volume in the series' history. The game features not only offline battles that can be played with family and friends, but also online battles that connect players from all over the world. In addition to the well-known Standard, Grand Prix, and Battle 64, a new battle mode called Castle, in which players are divided into attack side and castle side to battle for the treasure. A stage editor function has also been added, allowing players to create their own stages for Castle and share them online with players around the globe. Based on the options that are presented this week, Blue, which one are you choosing?
Well, I've never been a Bomberman fan, so I'll go ahead and skip that. Thunder Ray looks really cool, but please don't hate me, you guys. I don't enjoy Punch-Out that much, so I would probably not go for that. But Axolotl looks adorable. It looks super fun. I like that it's got the two types of gameplay where you've got to go through the levels, but then it also looks like you've got a home base that you've got to manage with raising the baby axolotls to become cold-blooded killers. I always love games that offer that kind of dual-sided gameplay, so I'm 100,000% in for Axolotl.
Nice. Ryan, what about you?
First of all, I am appalled that somebody doesn't like Punch-Out games.
Yeah.
Clearly, you never joined the Nintendo fan club.
What a coincidence I didn't.
So Super Bomberman R for the Switch, I bought the game. I played it quite a bit. The one thing I didn't like about that game is that when you would get a new character, they would come with these abilities, and it would almost make certain characters really overpowered. And as a result of that, it really kind of ruined the fun. The real fun of kind of the old school Bomberman is that everybody was equal, right? And it was just your skill alone was going to determine if you won. Luck as well, but skill as well. So I kind of became disillusioned with Super Bomberman R. So probably wouldn't check out 2 unless something is fixed. But the thing is, I think I'm in the minority there. I think a lot of people who are into Bomberman probably like that mechanic. So I'm assuming they're not fixing this for me. As far as Axolotl, despite my desire to battle against slithering sock snakes and giant crabs.
Sounds like a Friday night at the red light district.
Roguelike shooter does not appeal to me. So this is where Thunder Ray comes in. And I have been dying for a new Punch-Out game after Punch-Out Wii. And there's been some small indie games that have come out that have been fun with this, but I want one that is well polished, that's really well thought out. And I would love to get back into it because I absolutely loved Mike Tyson's Punch Out, Super Punch Out, as well as Wii Punch Out. So Thunder Ray definitely gets my vote.
Very nice.
Donnie, what about you?
I will share the same sentiment as far as like Super Bomberman. I like the Bomberman games. They're fun, but it's not something I feel like I gravitate towards all the time. It looks okay, but not really something I need to run out and grab. AK Axolotl looks fun. It's that whole like, oh, I'm so cute, but here's my big knife and my minigun I'm going to tear you to shreds with. You know, that whole juxtaposition I really love. But the one that I'm going to run out and pick up probably tomorrow whenever it comes out is Thunder Ray.
My man.
I mean, come on. One of my top five favorite games is Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Mm-hmm. And now that they're coming out with another game that's inspired by the retro goodness that we know and love, I'm all in. 100% for Thunder Ray. I'm picking it up tomorrow.
All right, this month we are giving away a copy of Starfield Standard Edition to the platform of your choice, Xbox or PC. Now, we had nearly 500 entries for this one, so we want to give a heartfelt thank you to those who actually listened to the episode as part of your entry. Now, just a quick note about our methodology. All entries are entered into the list randomizer on random.org. If you did the one entry option, your name was entered one time. If you did the three entry option, your name was entered three times. When the giveaway closes, we hit randomize list and let random.org do the rest. So without further ado, this month's winner is BGM Final Night. Congratulations. Reach out to us via DM at Gamers Week PC on Twitter by Friday, September 22nd to give us your info and we will get your prize sent out. If you didn't win this time, don't worry. We will do a giveaway every single month here on the show. So stick around and keep listening. All right. So why don't we tackle our main topic for the week?
From Ars Technica, Unity's new per-install pricing enrages the game development community. For years, the Unity engine has earned goodwill from developers large and small for its royalty-free licensing structure, which meant developers incurred no extra costs based on how well a game sold. That goodwill has now been largely thrown out the window due to Unity's Tuesday announcement of a new fee structure that will start charging developers on a per-install basis after certain minimum thresholds are met. The newly introduced Unity runtime fee, which will go into effect on January 1st, 2024, will impose different per-install costs based on the company's different subscription tiers. Those on the Unity Personal tier, which includes free basic editor access, will be charged 20 cents per install after an individual game reaches $200,000 in annual revenue and 200,000 lifetime installs. Users of Unity's Pro and Enterprise tiers, which charge a separate annual subscription for access to a more fully featured Unity editor, will pay slightly smaller per install fees, starting at 12.5 cents to 15 cents after a game reaches $1 million in annual revenue and 1 million total installs. This is a major change from Unity's previous structure, which allowed developers making less than $100,000 per month to avoid fees altogether on the personal tier. There's no royalties, no f***ing around, Unity CEO John Riccitiello memorably told GamesIndustry.biz when rolling out the free personal tier in 2015. We're not nickel and diming people, and we're not charging them a royalty. When we say it's free, it's free.
Now that Unity has announced plans to nickel and dime successful Unity developers, the reaction from those developers has been swift and universally angry. To put it mild, I can say unequivocally, if you're starting a new game project, do not use Unity. Necrosoft Games' Brandon Sheffield, a longtime Unity engine supporter, said in a post entitled "The Death of Unity." Among Us developer Innersloth wrote on social media, "If this goes through, we'll delay content and features our players actually want to port our games elsewhere, as others are also considering." Many developers expressed particular outrage over the idea that the new fee structure will apply to previously existing Unity games, not just those developed or released after the new fee go into effect next year. While installs made before January 1st, 2024 will not incur any pre-install fees, those previous installs will be used to help calculate whether a game meets the applicable lifetime installs threshold, according to Unity's FAQ. That kind of bait-and-switch application of new rules was a tough pill to swallow for many developers who invested time and effort in Unity before Tuesday's announcement, based in part on its royalty-free structure. I already committed to their engine for a new game, Falconeer developer Thomas Sella wrote on social media, put years and years of work into my pipeline. I did so under a simple per-seat license I'm happy to pay now. While I'm close to the release, they spring something new on me. Not a price increase, a fundamental change in how we do business together. I have no options, cannot go back, can only bend and pay up. It's a form of blackmail.
Even with perfect foreknowledge and fee calculations, Unity's new fee structure could severely impact what kind of business model is feasible for many games. Sheffield points out that a success story like Vampire Survivors, which leveraged a 99-cent price to help achieve viral liftoff, would be much harder to pull off under the new Unity structure. Imagine releasing a game for 99 cents under the personal plan, where Steam takes 30% off the top for their platform fee, and then Unity takes 20 cents per install, and now you're making a maximum of 46 cents on the dollar, Sheffield wrote. As a developer who starts a game under the personal plan because you're not sure how well it'll do, you're punished, astoundingly so, for being a breakout success. Per-install fees could also be particularly damaging for games distributed using subscription-based business models like Microsoft's Game Pass. Another Crab's Treasure will be free to install for 25 million Game Pass subscribers, developer Aggro Crab Games wrote on a social media. If a fraction of those users download our game, Unity could take a fee that puts an enormous dent in our income and threatens the sustainability of our business. In a clarifying afternoon post after the initial fee announcement, Unity said that the large majority of Unity editor users are currently not paying anything and will not be affected by this change, and that the developers who will be impacted are generally those who have successful games and are generating revenue way above the thresholds we outlined in our blog. Beyond that, Unity says that it is actively listening to and following your questions closely. Based on the tone of those questions and responses from developers so far, that kind of active listening will need to be followed by actively changing policies, a la Dungeons & Dragons maker Hasbro reversing its wildly unpopular licensing changes earlier this year to restore any semblance of trust between Unity and the community. Unity!
Isn't that an ironic name now?
Right. Holy crap.
So we live in a world where if you say something, people can find it pretty f***ing easily.
Right.
So if you're going to say something like, there are no royalties, no f***ing around, we're not nickel and diamond people, we're not charging a royalty. When I say it's free, it's free. You got to stick to that one.
That's called pulling out the receipts, man. Everybody's got receipts in the digital age.
I think the difference is that in the digital age, nobody cares about receipts, though. Especially not big companies who say that we've decided we want to make more money and we can do it.
Because all they have to say is our focus has shifted. Our business model has shifted.
Right, exactly. And then if they've got shareholders or investors or whatever, then everybody goes, do it. Mm-hmm. Charge our customers more. Drive them away to our competitors. The number of major games that are developed on Unity is Genshin Impact, Marvel Snap, Pokemon Go, Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, Fall Guys, Cuphead, Outer Wilds, Tunics. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And they're overwhelmingly indie games. Silksong is being developed on Unity. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen.
How many punches in the gut have you got?
That game's never going to get released.
It could very easily kill so many of these developers, whether they decide that, like the one developer in here, Falconeer developer Thomas Sala wrote on social media, I have no options, cannot go back, can only bend and pay up. It's a form of blackmail. So if they make that choice, the fees could kill their game if it gets too successful. Or if they decide they can't release the game at all, and now they've got to port it to a whole other engine, that a delay in release, those additional resources that it will cost, that could also kill a bunch of developers. It's not like all these indie developers are working with massive budgets and have all this wiggle room.
You are basically being punished for being successful.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that that seems the exact opposite of what you would want to do with your key developers.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would almost be better off doing like a partner program where they get certain discounts, right? If you're a in their mind, a big game developer, right, using Unity, and you're getting all of these downloads, then they slash the prices that you would pay. Like, say, don't even charge somebody to use the program itself, and then provide incentives or something like that. But still, I mean, obviously attempt to make money off of them, but it just doesn't seem like it's targeted for the right kind of motivations to use this engine anymore. And let's just say you are somebody who's developing games and you're banking on the fact that these installs are going to give you enough money to make your next game. And you just happen to get like a viral game like Vampire Survivors or something like that, where it just comes out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, basically 20%, because Vampire Survivors was 99 cents a download, 20% of your income is taken away as a result of that. So not only are you looking at people who are going to say, well, I need to supplement this then by charging more for each one of these games. So then it becomes anti-consumer. I just don't see a positive thing coming out of this.
Well, and that's kind of like how they're figuring the fee. That's part of it. Because as reading up on this issue, it seems that a lot of developers don't trust that Unity has the ability to track downloads accurately. Like, some of the issues coming up are, if your game is part of a Humble Bundle, or for something like on Game Pass, another Crab Treasure mentioned, if they have a bunch of people try their game, play it for 2 minutes, decide they don't like it, it doesn't matter, they're still getting charged for it.
Right.
And then another issue that I saw brought up is the idea that, well, a lot of gamers don't mind putting in the time and effort to do review bombs if they don't like a game. So what's to stop people from doing download bombing on a game?
Oh.
You install it, delete it, install it, delete it, install it, delete it repeatedly, and just keep charging the developer.
That's shitty behavior.
It is, but it does point out all the holes in this pricing structure. Is how is Unity going to keep track of these downloads? And when you receive your bill from Unity, how do you know that it's accurate?
I think there's got to be at least some type of code that tells you that prevents somebody from doing that, right? I think they probably have already had the foresight to think about that. Like, oh, if I'm going to review bomb this, or if I don't like the developer, then I'm going to cause them strife. I'm going to keep installing and deleting, installing, deleting, installing, deleting. There is something within that game's code that could tell them this particular game was installed and, okay, it was removed, it was installed again, but it only counts as one specific install.
Well, it should. But it should. That's not to Unity's advantage to count it that way. I mean, if that's how you're going to count it, then you would charge per purchase, not per download.
It's not to Unity's, but it's to the developer's benefit.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, obviously, developers are not trusting Unity to look at it that same way.
Exactly.
So how do you come back from this, right? Let's say they reverse course. They've lost the trust of everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody who is thinking about making a game or started making a game on Unity is probably going to tuck tail and run, right?
Yeah. I don't think there is any coming back from this.
Right.
Because even if they walk it back, as a lot of these developers expressed, they feel that they can't trust Unity anymore.
Right. Who says that 6 months down the road, they're not going to try the same shit?
Right. And also the way they're implementing it has been super scummy. Like, for example, everything doesn't start fresh on January 1, 2024. If you've had your game on Unity for 10 years, the amount of installs that you've had over those 10 years count to your lifetime total. So before the fees even go into effect, you could be way over that 200,000 mark.
Right. You are essentially driving people to your competitors. I can see now so many more games are coming out on the Unreal Engine or Blender or even Game Maker Studio, which, I mean, that was a joke back whenever I was in school.
Right.
And they were trying to say, oh, you can make so many great games on Game Maker. We're like, who the hell? Like, what AAA studio uses Game Maker?
Right. And not only that, you've also ensured that big companies are never going to use you.
Right.
I mean, you think Nintendo's going to develop the next Pokemon game on Unity? Absolutely
right,
not.
Right.
And then companies like Capcom with their proprietary RE engine are going, whoo. I am betting that Unity is going to cave. I'm going to bet that they're going to walk this back.
Yep, I agree.
The question is how long it will take. And I'm hoping they don't do it before Friday when this episode drops.
That would be our luck.
It would be our luck.
It'll be that classic PR thing where it's like, we've listened to your feedback. Like, you know what? We f***ed up. We absolutely yes. wholeheartedly f***ed up.
Just say it like it is.
Be real with us and then mm-hmm. say that. Say that you f***ed up.
It's not going to make people forgive you. But no, at least they might respect you a fraction more.
And in the press release, they're going to be like, we got an early release of the Gamers Week podcast, and they made some really good points.
As they always do. Can you imagine if Buzzsprout charged us for every download?
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus. Rude.
Yeah.
You made $2 this month.
Before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by A Gamer Looks at 40 podcast. The show explores the history of video games through the stories and experiences of the people who lived it. Joint host Bill Tucker, along with a rotating cast of friends, family, podcasters, journalists, and anybody with a story to tell as they go beyond the bits and bytes to share personal recollections of the last 30 years of gaming. So this week's question is, what's the first non-earthbound thing that pops into your mind when you hear the words fuzzy pickles? Yep, this is a T-ball for you three, but you deserve a fun one. Let Bill know your answer by replying to his pinned tweet at @agamerlooksat40 on Twitter.
I'm assuming he means suitable for work answers.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct.
Fuzzy Pickles was probably Ron Jeremy's nickname back in the 70s.
No. Mildly safe for work. I'll yeah, yeah. I'm going to go kind of gross on this one.
Oh, no.
The first thing that came to mind was actually the concept of hairy tofu. Are you familiar with this?
Yes.
So it's a Chinese delicacy that is a fermented type of tofu that develops a little bit of hair on top of it.
Oh, like a tofu toupee?
Yes, like a tofu toupee.
Yeah, there that's we five go. Times fast.
I don't think I could.
Tofu toupee, tofu toupee, tofu toupee, tofu toupee, tofu toupee.
Ah, you messed up.
I got close, though. At least I tried.
Tofu toupee, tofu toupee, tofu toupee, tofu toupee, tofu toupee. I did it.
Look at the skill we got on this podcast.
Gather round, my fellow bibliophiles. Get that sparkling rosé out of the cooler and tell Brittany to stop lying on her Hinge profile. It's time for the Gamers Week Book Club. And this is a new segment we're trying out where we're going to read video game books together. So the first one that we're going to try out is a book from the Nintendo Adventure Books Choose Your Own Adventure series. This is number 6 in the series called Doors to Doom. These books were released in 1991 and 1992. And at the end, you're meant to keep track of your points to see how you did. And you get a gamer score at the end. So I think we can do pretty well, but I'm not so sure.
I think we got this.
I'm nervous.
I think we should be nervous. Chapter 1. Clunk. Luigi awakens with a start. He sits up in bed and rubs his eyes as his bedroom materializes through a sleepy haze. In the corner is his newest invention, a subsonic pipe de-slimer. Gotta keep your pipes from being slimy.
Wow.
This smell of salami, the remains of last night's snack, wafts up from the bedside table. The room is in the back of the Mario Brothers plumbing shop in Brooklyn, New York. Along with his older brother Mario, Luigi is a master plumber. But Mario and Luigi have a secret life. They are the chief heroes of the magical Mushroom Kingdom. This world below the surface of the earth is populated by happy mushrooms and ruled by the Mushroom King and his daughter Princess Toadstool. But a band of evil turtles and other monsters led by King Bowser Koopa is constantly trying to take over the kingdom. The Super Mario Brothers have been called to the rescue many times. They usually take the quickest way there, through the main pipe in their shop. A dull noise comes from the hallway. Luigi climbs out of bed and heads for the door. He knows what to expect when he reaches it. Mario is sleepwalking again. He's going to hurt himself, Luigi mumbles drowsily. Or worse, he adds, snapping awake, he'll break the new titanium pipe windsurfer I left in the hall. He rushes to the door. Whew, the windsurfer's okay, he says. But his brother is about to step into a pipe at the end of the hall, a pipe that wasn't there when they went to bed. Mario, stop! Luigi shouts. He leaps down the hall and grabs Mario by his overall straps, just as the short, round plumber takes a final step into the pipe. Gotcha, exclaims Luigi. Turn to page 51. Gotcha! 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 The word echoes against the pipe walls as Luigi and Mario tumble head over plunger through the darkness. The tall, thin Luigi lands with a thud on top of his sibling. Mario comes to with a groan as Luigi untangles himself and struggles to his feet. That's the last time I save you from sleepwalking, Luigi scolds. Did you get the number of that truck? Mumbles Mario, staggering upright. The two brothers look around. They are in a square, dimly lit room made of gray stone blocks. The walls extend upward into darkness. There are no doors, pipes, stairways, or other escape routes visible. The sound of a squeaking hinge makes both plumbers look up. High above them, well beyond jumping range, a door opens. Light pours into the chamber. In the doorway stands a short, round figure in a white lab coat. His oversized feet protrude from beneath the coat and extend beyond the edge of the doorway. Although the figure has the squat shape of a Goomba, his head is larger and rounder than the typical Goombas, making him look almost intelligent. Tufts of hair protrude from both sides of his otherwise bald scalp, but the beady eyes and large mouth leave no doubt that this is a member of the Rogue Mushroom Clan. As Mario and Luigi stare at the strange Goomba, he chuckles.
Welcome,
he says in a crackly little voice.
I'm so glad you dropped in.
Very funny, shouts Mario.
Let me introduce myself. I am Dr. Sporus van Fungenstein, the greatest scientist in the Mushroom Kingdom and its next ruler.
The Mario brothers stare in disbelief. The mad Goomba scientist continues.
I plan to conquer all the mushroom worlds and make a few bucks on the side.
Doesn't everyone? Asks Luigi sarcastically.
But my plan is infallible,
croaks Dr. von Fungenstein.
I have an irresistible recipe for mushroom and turtle soup, which I plan to sell in a chain of fast food restaurants. There's real money in fast food.
Mario and Luigi can't believe their ears. Luigi squints up at the strange little creature. You think you can defeat the Mushroom King and Bowser Koopa and turn their subjects into fast food?
I've already started. With my secret weapon, I can make new passageways into all of the known mushroom worlds. My Doors to Doom machine can send the inhabitants of one world into another, and thereby get rid of them forever. I have already taken care of almost everyone who can stop my plan. You two are the last, and now you've fallen into my little trap.
Let me guess, says Mario, you brought us here to make plumber sauce to spice up your soup.
Oh. No!
I think I'll pass on the plumber sauce.
Don't knock it till you tried it.
Take your word.
Not exactly,
cackles von Fungenstein. With that, the lunatic scientist turns on his heels and slams the door. Crazed laughter echoes above them. The Mario brothers look at each other in disbelief as two doors materialize on the other side of the tiny room. One door is white, and the other is black. And we've reached our first decision. If Mario and Luigi take the white door, turn to page 92. If they take the black door, turn to page 101.
Donnie, I'm going to trust you on this one.
Oh, you're going to trust me? Let's go with the... I'm going to go with my gut and say the black door.
Are you sure?
Yes.
All right. Let's see if you've killed us already. Luigi turns the knob and opens the black door. He stares into utter darkness. Mario joins him at the entrance. What do you think is out there? Asks the younger brother. Before Mario can answer, the door slams shut behind them, shoving both plumbers into the dark chamber. The floor abruptly disappears beneath them, and they fall for several seconds. When they land, they are on the top level of a green wedding cake-shaped hill. The grass on the hillside forms a wavy pattern. A hooded pink figure patrols the next ledge down. The figure is wearing a white mask and moving back and forth along the ledge in an unending cycle. Luigi points down at the pink sentry. A shy guy, he says to Mario. Let's jump over it. Mario and Luigi leap over the shy guy, landing on a lower level of the terraced hill. As Mario looks around, his expression grows gloomier by the minute. I think we've been here before, he says. I hope you're still dreaming, responds Luigi, because this sure looks like the entrance to Subcon, the land of dreams. The Super Mario Brothers get 15 points.
Yes, I made the right decision. See?
Turn to page 85. Subcon, Mario says hollowly. Luigi looks around at the open, airy landscape. I always liked Subcon, he says, admiring the blue sky, white clouds, green hills, and palm trees. The perfect place for a vacation, adds Mario. I don't even mind the constant attacks from shy guys, tweeters, sniffits, and ninjis. But that never-ending organ music drives me batty. As if on cue, two red-clad shy guys approach the plumbers. Immediately, Mario bends down and plucks a clump of grass growing nearby. When he pulls up the grass, a smiling turnip emerges from the ground. Mario hurls the vegetable at the leading shy guy. Remember to eat your vegetables, he says coyly. The shy guy recoils from the impact of the turnip and collides with its companion. Both monsters bounce once, turn upside down, and disappear into the ground. Shy guys sure hate veggies, says Luigi, pulling another turnip from the ground. Did you notice anything different about them? Asks Mario. Well, they were wearing sunglasses over their masks, and they had on Hawaiian robes, said Luigi. Nothing unusual, he adds. I know Subcon is strange, but surfer shy guys are ridiculous, mutters Mario. It's more like Surfcon than Subcon, comments Luigi, smiling at his own joke. This 90s humor, man.
Oh, man.
The two plumbers trot along a grassy path. They encounter more beach bum shy guys and several tweeters dressed in surfer shorts. As they get deeper into Subcon, the dream demons become more plentiful, but with the help of the local vegetable crop, the Mario Brothers handle them easily. Luigi takes the lead while Mario trails behind, lost in thought. Finally, the red-clad plumber calls out to his younger brother, I remember a warp zone up ahead. If we can find a magic potion, we can take a shortcut to the end of Subcon. They approach a cliff and look over the edge. The warp zone is down there, says Mario. How do we get down? Asks Luigi. We don't learn to fly until the next adventure. Heh. I understood that reference. Without warning, a large group of black figures approach. They look like little devils with big eyes. They are moving very fast directly toward the Mario Brothers. A swarm of ninjis, exclaims Luigi. The ninjis are dressed completely in black, as usual, except that now they are wearing black bicycle pants emblazoned with yellow palm trees and red Reebobom sneakers. Get it? Instead of Reebok?
A Reebok?
It's Reebobom sneakers.
Wah, 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 wah.
There's too many of them, says Luigi. Our only hope is to jump. If Luigi has the parasol, turn to page 89. We don't have the parasol, you guys.
So we're going to have to listen.
If Luigi has no parasol, turn to page 118.
I think Donnie messed up.
But we got the points.
But the points.
Shouts Mario. I knew it wasn't safe, sighs Luigi. The two plumbers plunge through space. They land on the floor back in Dr. Von Fungenstein's small room. The doctor reappears in the door above them.
I expected more from both of you,
he says, shaking his head disappointedly. He pulls a large lever just inside the door. Mario and Luigi hear a grinding sound as the walls begin to close in on them.
It's worse.
You guessed right about the plumber sauce,
laughs the doctor, slamming the door shut. Game over.
So I killed us. I killed us.
You did kill us. It took a little longer than I thought, but you did kill us.
It looks so promising.
I guess that's a good place to conclude the very first Gamers Week Book Club. If the listeners liked this and they would like us to continue reading this book next time, see if Donnie can avoid killing us, let us know.
So it's my fault, right? This isn't a collective thing. It's my fault.
You made the decision.
That's right.
But you guys put that on my shoulders.
Don't blame me. I'm just the narrator.
Right. It was Ryan. It was all Ryan's fault.
Great power comes great responsibility, Donnie.
You must guide us through this choose your own adventure.
All right, so that'll about do it for us here at Gamers Week. Thank you for listening to episode 90 of Gamers Week podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club podcast, Love Retro BTW, and A Gamer Looks at 40 podcast for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. And if you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC, email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv/GamersWeekPodcast. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. And join us on Patreon at patreon.com/GamersWeek. Finally, since you made it all the way to the end of the episode, please leave us a rating and review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
And you could watch us on Twitch last night when I streamed,
which was fantastic, because I would like to quote you, Jesus Christ.
It's not quite the same if you're not shaking in your chair with the look of pure unadulterated fear.
I'm just like just shaking really quick.
I cut out the fact that for a good 20 seconds after that, you were just staring at the screen.
And the best part of that is that probably 5 minutes earlier, he had been complaining that the game wasn't scary.
Right.
Up until that point, it was like it was lulling me in with a false sense of security.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Got him.
1-800 got him.
Well, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm so glad you dropped in.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.